The ripple effects of the US sanctions and freezing of billions of dollars in Afghans' assets are pushing up inflation in Afghanistan. People here are calling for the release of assets and more international funding to the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Polls show that a divided Congress appears all but assured 6 weeks before the federal legislative vote in the United States, which would also ensure continued political division and stagnation. The Democrat-led inquiry over protests which alleged election fraud in 2020 continue to plod on, but polls show they have had essentially no effect on changing voters' opinions. While longtime Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi looks certain to be forced out of power in November, the top level of Republican leadership looks likely to add more so-called Trumpists, reflecting the enduring influence of ex-President Donald Trump. The biggest unofficial political party in the United States is actually the self-declared independent voter. Polls indicate that a huge swing of 12% has taken place within this king-making group. In 2020, post-election polls found that they favored Democrats by 7%, but independents are now tilting towards Republicans by 5%.
Not happy with the way things are, obviously. We're all worried about inflation and it's impacting our, you know, wallets. I wish there were more parties besides Republicans and Democrats, because it's just, you know, party interests, and people like you and me are just left behind. We have to live our lives and politicians aren't really thinking about us.
Pollsters say the Democratic Party seems certain to lose control of the lower house of parliament, if not both houses. As the election nears, many expect the ongoing inflation and economic growth disasters caused by blowback from Western sanctions on Russia to play a larger and larger role in voters' decisions. A recent survey by Forbes found that 30% of Americans are drawing from their savings more than usual, which is the highest percentage in the survey's history. Another analysis found that the average American has lost over $4,000 in income since Joe Biden took office due to the increases in the inflation and interest rates. The midterms are on track to be the most expensive vote ever, reaching $10 billion by Election Day. Many say that's a reminder of the enormous role played in American democracy by money and advertising. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
The crisis hit Lebanon is once again a scene of angry masses. The parliament is back to meet and debate a new budget. Yet protesters see the budget being discussed as elusive.
Instead of putting together a budget which encourages development in agriculture, industrial production, and all fields in Lebanon, they want to impoverish the people and push them to die in the sea as they immigrate illegally. The government, which relies on debt, is being controlled by a mob, which is the Banks Association and the Central Bank. They should be held accountable for getting billions of dollars out of the country.
Banks reopened partially on Monday following a week-long closure in the wake of a wave of holdups. Depositors stormed at least 7 bank branches in the capital and abroad, demanding their trapped savings.
We know these banks, you know, where we invested our money. But unfortunately, they stole the money between themselves, and they plan, and every time they create a story.
One woman named Sally Hafiz forced one branch to give her $13,000 of her savings, saying she needed it to pay for her sister's medical treatment. But she didn't take back her money on her own.
They left us no other choice. We encouraged Sally, and we were with her when she held up the bank, because it was a humanitarian situation, and we will be with all the people who urgently need their money. Our government is rotten and corrupt, and so is the judicial system.
A former member of parliament tells Press TV that the government has been procrastinating while time is running out. The governmental institutions, including schools, are almost out of service.
The entire governmental sector is paralyzed. The workers, the military personnel, the ministerial workers, the public teachers, they all have rights and they can barely do their job. There's no health care, no educational assistance. The budget plan the parliament is debating today is unfair.
Lebanon's economic downfall began in October 2019. The Lebanese pound has lost around 90% of its value against the U.S. dollar, but officials have failed to put in place necessary reforms. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
From September 23rd to 27th, referendums on joining Russia were held in the Donetsk and Lugansk People's Republics, as well as the Zaporozhye and Kherson regions. Pro-Russian representatives of those regions say joining Russia will secure their territories and restore historical justice. They believe the move is vital in the face of what they call constant acts of terror by the nationalist authorities in Kyiv and NATO countries that supply weapons to Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has backed the referendums, saying Moscow will support the decision made by the residents of the four regions.
Today, in the context of a special military operation and referendums in Donbas, saving people in all territories, namely saving people in all territories where this referendum is being held, is the main focus of Russia.
The referendum will determine the fate of 8 million people living in the LPR, the DPR, and the regions of Zaporozhye and Kherson.
People are tired and exhausted. They are being shelled and bombed every day. As a result, the residents of these republics ask authorities to hold referendums as soon as possible. Most of them have been supporting joining Russia since 2014. The second reason is the fear of any potential revenge by the Ukrainian regime.
Decisions of this kind and steps are always taken when the situation allows it. All the pros and cons are weighed. It has now become clear that the referendums are in line with the plans that the top leadership of Russia has. The future of Russia's constituent regions is complicated. Western countries will impose sanctions against their residents, like in the case of Crimea. Those regions were degraded under the Ukrainian leadership. Money was not invested in them at all. And now Russia is trying to ensure security and normal life in those territories.
Despite shelling of the territories where the secession referendums were held, the voter turnout was over 80% in all those regions. First partial results show that the overwhelming majority of the residents are in favor of joining Russia.
Most of the voters believe that if a state can join NATO despite Russia's opposition, then disputed Ukrainian regions can join Russia without the West's approval. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
As largely predicted by pollsters, the Brothers of Italy party has won the most votes in Italy's snap election, leading a right-wing coalition to victory. The turnout for the general election was about 64%, the lowest percentage ever recorded, around 9 points lower than the 73% turnout for the 2018 general election. Brothers of Italy, a group founded 10 years ago by its leader, Giorgia Meloni, grabbed more than 26% of the vote, while its allies, the League and the more moderate Silvio Berlusconi's Forza Italia, received respectively 9 and 8%. Meloni said on Monday that a future centre-right government would not betray the trust of the Italian people.
Questo è il tempo della responsabilità.
This is a time for responsibility. This is a time in which, if you want to be part of history, you must realize that we have responsibility towards millions of people who chose us. We won't betray it, like we never have.
Meloni's flagship policies include defending traditional social values, anti-immigration programs, and the reduction of taxes. Meloni is slated to become the next prime minister, the first woman in Italy who has ever been appointed to that position. The news that a coalition led by Brothers of Italy won a decisive victory in Italy's snap elections has been welcomed by far-right parties from across Europe. The Brothers of Italy has relentlessly advocated for a free Europe, including sovereign countries, and promoted traditional values and essentialist conceptions of gender.
Certainly it won't be an easy task for Meloni to reassure the EU, other international partners and the moderate electorate, and at the same time maintain a strong connection with international populist groups and a more radical electorate. I don't think Meloni will ever find a way to mediate between these issues. That's why I believe her policies won't be too bold.
Among the defeated coalitions in Italy's national elections was the Democratic Party, growingly seen by a large number of Italians as the party of the establishment. Its leader Enrico Letta conceded defeat early on Monday, adding that his party would be the largest opposition force in the next parliament.
It is evident that mistakes were made. I will lead the next party until the next Congress, when a new leader will be determined.
According to the Italian constitution, newly elected members of the parliament must now meet within 20 days. The country's president, Sergio Mattarella, will begin consultations on who should be appointed as the new prime minister with the presidents of the Senate and Chamber of Deputies, the leaders of the main parties, and, at a later stage, with parliamentary groups. Max Civili, Rome.
The British pound takes a pounding yet again, only days after the country's finance minister announced the biggest tax-cutting package in decades, all funded by borrowing at a time of high inflation. They termed it a mini-budget, but it was a mega shift in direction. The Chancellor confirmed the government would implement Prime Minister Liz Truss's leadership campaign pledges to reverse the national insurance rise, cancel the corporation tax rise, and a surprise new tax cut for the highest earners.
Take the additional rate of income tax. At 45%, it is currently higher than the headline top rate in G7 countries like the US and Italy. And it is even higher than social democracies like Norway. But I'm not going to cut the additional rate of tax today, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to abolish it altogether.
Ordinary Britons may not think about exchange rates on a daily basis, but a fall in the pound will affect their day-to-day.
Britain imports nearly half of its foodstuffs, and therefore the pound gets weaker, the cost of that those basic foodstuffs goes up dramatically. And so anything which is coming in will be hitting inflation at a time when you don't want to have that. The only good news part of actually of this would be actually your exports are now better value. The trouble is if the global demand is shrinking, therefore the demand for those exports would also be shrinking.
There are also concerns about a long recession as winter looms with no end in sight to the energy crisis or the war in Ukraine. Online, calls for a general election are gaining traction. And in the Conservative Party itself, rumors about a no-confidence vote in the brand new prime minister.
Some experts say the UK's central bank, the Bank of England, could intervene to halt the pound sliding. Many others are saying the government's decision to borrow its way out of the current situation could end in tears. Saeed Burizup, London.
The crisis hit Lebanon is once again a scene of angry masses. The parliament is back to meet and debate a new budget. Yet protesters see the budget being discussed as elusive.
Instead of putting together a budget which encourages development in agriculture, industrial production and oil fields in Lebanon, they want to impoverish the people and push them to die in the sea as they immigrate illegally. The government which relies on debt is being controlled by a mob, which is the Banks Association and the Central Bank. They should be held accountable for getting billions of dollars out of the country.
Banks reopened partially on Monday following a week-long closure in the wake of a wave of holdups. Depositors stormed at least 7 bank branches in the capital and abroad demanding their trapped savings.
We know these banks, you know, where we invested our money. But unfortunately, they stole the money between themselves, and they plan, and every time they create a story.
One woman named Sally Hafiz forced one branch to give her $13,000 of her savings, saying she needed it to pay for her sister's medical treatment. But she didn't take back her money on her own.
They left us no other choice. We encouraged Sally, and we were with her when she held up the bank, because it was a humanitarian situation, and we will be with all the people who urgently need their money. Our government is rotten and corrupt, and so is the judicial system.
The government has been procrastinating while time is running out. The governmental institutions, including schools, are almost out of service.
The entire governmental sector is paralyzed. The workers, the military personnel, the ministerial workers, the public teachers, they all have rights and they can barely do their job. There's no health care, no educational assistance. The budget plan the parliament is debating today is unfair.
Lebanon's economic downfall began in October 2019. The Lebanese pound has lost around 90% of its value against the U.S. dollar, but officials have failed to put in place necessary reforms. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before thee on this day of mine, and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight, a turning point in the months-long war between Russia and Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed the treaties on the accession of four Ukrainian regions. This follows referendums recently held in Kherson, Zaporizhia, Donetsk, and Luhansk, where people voted overwhelmingly to join Russia, a vote as expected not recognized by Ukraine and its Western allies. Kiev was quick to respond to Moscow's proclamation by announcing its application for accelerated membership in the Western Military Alliance, NATO. In this edition of Spotlight, we'll discuss what this move means for the Russia-Ukraine conflict and how it affects the growing tensions between Moscow and the West. Joining us on tonight's show, we have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich joining us from Belgrade. And contributor at the Schiller Institute, Carol Varekin, joining us from the French capital, Paris.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Bosnich in Belgrade. Russia says that people in the four regions have voted overwhelmingly to join the Russian Federation. Ukraine and its Western allies, including the EU and the U.S., have called the referendums illegal and a sham. I want you to give us your perspective on the referendums and their ratifications by Moscow.
Well, first of all, this is just effectively a fait accompli. The accession of these territories to the Russian Federation was achieved by military means, but the important thing is that the people in those regions are fully in support of joining Russia and becoming members and citizens of Russia. The condemnation from the West is typical because they speak one thing and do another. if we talk about the United States itself, the entire country of the United States was stolen from its original inhabitants, and referenda were never used to take over territory. They simply stole it or took it by force of arms. And for the United States to be condemning Russia's efforts to involve the people in each of these decisions is simply not believable and not credible.
Let's cross over to our guest in Paris, Mr. Varikhan. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has described Russia's incorporation of the territories as a, quote, dangerous escalation and an illegal violation of the UN Charter. Talk to us about the legality of the move and also touch up on the issue, as our guest in Belgrade did, as to why these regions have voted in favor of joining Russia so overwhelmingly.
Well, the Western narrative is increasingly Orwellian, and where peace is war and the world is upside down, because the nuance, the differentiation, which is really has to be made, is the difference between international order based on rules written exclusively by the West, and then on the other side, the international law as it was defined by the Charter of both the Atlantic Charter in 1941 and by the United Nations, which includes the self-determinations of people to know where what what kind of self-governance they want. So since this war has started in 2014, and that people in Kiev have been denying not only the Russian speakers but also the Hungarian speakers to use their own language to manage their affairs, many of these Russian-speaking people in southern and eastern Ukraine, of course, felt like kicked out of their own country and are fully quite happy that they can be part of the Russian Federation. What I am really shocked with is the fact that there is apparently there were a kind at least over 100 of observers from foreign countries, including from South Africa, France, and other countries. And these observers, nobody is interviewing them. I got a report from a French observer who said it was just normal, and that contrary to that Mr. Blinken was saying, this is not on gunpoint people push to vote. These are people happy to vote and finally relieved that they can now think about a better future.
John Wozniak, what does this accession by Russia mean overall for the conflict itself? How will this change the situation on the ground, in your opinion?
Oh, this is, in fact, a night and day change in the situation. Now that these territories have declared for membership in the Russian Federation and the president has signed a decree accepting their application, once the legal formalities are completed and the state declarations are circulated, then any attack by Ukrainian forces on these territories constitutes, at least in the eyes of Russia and its allies and the many other countries around the world that recognize the procedure of referenda, it constitutes an act of war against Russia proper. This could explain why President Putin called up so many reservists, because if Ukraine wants to attack Russia, then Russia will, of course, have to defend itself. And the result of Russia itself having to defend itself against Ukraine will mean a totally new phase in the war and could bring down the entire Ukraine regime in Kiev. That's really playing with fire. But of course, the decision is not being made by the marionette president that the United States put in power there, Mr. Zelensky, but it is being made in NATO headquarters, where they're trying to gauge how much further they can push this conflict, how many more weapons they can circulate, and how much more they can dominate the European allies of America ever since World War II. This is really a turning point where we see whether NATO cracks or whether NATO continues to oppress the entire region. This is the day.
Mr. Varikhan, Ukraine says now that it's applying for fast-track NATO membership following Moscow's formal integration of those four Ukrainian regions into Russia. I want to get your thoughts on this issue itself. whether it will be heeded by NATO at this point, and what kind of a response also are you expecting to see from the likes of the U.S. and the EU and possibly the United Nations?
Well, I just watched the press conference of Mr. Stoltenberg in Brussels, and the most scary thing about this whole press conference is that he qualified the integration of these four regions as the most serious escalations since the beginning of the conflict. So instead of learning the lesson that this war is unwinnable and that the West should stop using the Ukrainians as cannon fodder, they keep insisting that this is all that the Russians are the aggressor, and that we cannot sign peace, and that the West is supposed to fight to liberate these four regions, including Crimea, which is a special case, and which is even most any professional diplomat would take out the Crimea issue out of the current ceasefire negotiation, because it's a very complicated issue. So the most scary thing is on the one side the blind attitude of NATO, and I would say on the other side the new element, which has been the sabotage of the gas pipelines close to Denmark.
John Lozenge, I want you to address that issue as well. In terms of responses, U.S. President Joe Biden said Washington will never recognize what he called Russia's annexation of Ukrainian land. The European Union has vowed to never recognize the absorption, accused the Kremlin of jeopardizing global security. Give us your thoughts on the reactions and responses that will we be seeing from NATO countries, from the United States, maybe even the UN.
Well, when a political leader says they will never recognize an act, that's a diplomatic code for impotence. It means that we can't do anything about it. We realize that we can't reverse it. But at least on paper, we're going to say we don't recognize it. This is effectively a day of victory for Russia. And I would also dispute Mr. Stoltenberg's comment about this being a critical increase in the crisis. In fact, what has happened here is the crisis is winding down, because Russia has declared the inclusion of these territories into Russia proper, and this means that NATO now has to make a choice which they simply don't have the guts to make, which is to make war on Russia proper. They thought that they could twist arms, they thought that they could continue to pull strings and continue to do what they do best, because what NATO does best is not fight wars, but sell weapons. Mr. Stoltenberg is probably on a percentage cut for weapons sales, and that's where he makes his money. And that's the same with many of the leaders in the NATO countries. Their job is to sell weapons, to sell fear, and to get their taxpayers to continue dishing out to a military-industrial complex that not only runs the wars, but it bribes the politicians and runs the Western world. This conflict in Ukraine is not just a turning point locally in Ukraine, it's a global turning point that the world is saying, not just Russia, but the world is saying, don't do it anymore, we've had enough. And that is significantly visible when you see that the entire rest of the world, the countries that are not military colonies of the United States inside NATO, the entire rest of the world is united against this NATO incursion into the back doorstep of Russia.
Mr. Varikhan, in recent days, multiple gas leaks have been discovered in the Nord Stream pipelines running from Russia to Europe. Vladimir Putin earlier accused the U.S. and its allies of sabotaging the pipelines. He said, quote, "The sanctions were not enough for the Anglo-Saxons, so they moved on to sabotage," and he added, "It's clear to everyone who benefits from this." Who will benefit from such a scenario?
Well, of course, the first benefactor will be some of the Polish stooges, because they have created this new Baltic pipeline to get gas from Norway into Europe. So I mean, we cannot, we should, of course, investigation will have to bring up new elements, but it is, this thing is really incredible, because the first of all, the Baltic Sea is completely controlled by NATO. There were recent maneuvers, including on underwater drones, and even if they recognize that this was done by the Russians, it would be, a total failure. Secondly, there were all the warnings from Mike Pompeo to Condoleezza Rice to Biden himself on February 7, where he said they would never tolerate that the Nord Stream 2 pipeline would exist because it would create a more integrated cooperation between Germany and Russia. Now the big Russia is losing, and maybe the pipelines will be definitely become unusable, because the seawater creates a lot of corrosion inside the pipes, and it will be very hard to repair them. But in this way, I mean, many people in Eastern Europe, in the Czech Republic, there were huge demonstrations in favor trying to push the governments of Germany and others to open the Nord Stream pipelines and to come to a kind of deal and work out outside or get rid of the sanctions, because the winter is here arriving in Europe, and many people don't want to freeze. We want peace. We want to settle this question in a rational manner. And the big winner, the big loser in any case is Europe. And that's the new game changer, because if the United States and the forces behind NATO or the military industrial complex, if they start attacking the infrastructure inside the European Union, this is an entire new dimension of this global war.
John Bozich, Russia has time and again said countries supplying weapons to Ukraine and training its soldiers were in fact parties to the conflict. The question is, will this support ultimately result in this conflict spilling over into other regions and possibly turning into something bigger?
That's always a possibility if the conflict gets out of control. But it is not in the interest of any of the parties, including Ukraine, except perhaps for the joker president whose stay in power depends on the war continuing. What we've got here is a lateral expansion of the war into European territory. The attack on the pipeline, most likely done by England or America because they have the tools and the capacity to do it, is actually a militarized attack on the EU by non-EU members, England and America. Now, yes, the leaders of the EU are largely puppets of America and of England, and these puppets will not object, but the citizens of Europe should at some point be raising their heads up and saying, why are we putting up with this? Why are we continuing to elect leaders who do whatever they're ordered to do from Washington? So I would suggest that although there is a temporary setback in terms of cooperation between Russia and Germany, which is inevitable, that they will cooperate in the future, the temporary setback is pointing the finger at England and the United States, thereby distancing the people of Germany and the people of Europe from the Anglo-American Empire, which, if anything results from this war, the best thing that could result is that Europe becomes an independent territory again, no longer under Anglo-American foreign control.
Over to our guest in Paris. We're talking about the support that the United States and NATO has been giving to Ukraine. Is this support ultimately what the U.S. and NATO wants is the conflict to be prolonged and to see it dragged out for as long as possible in hopes that it weakens Russia? I want to get your perspective on that and whether they've been successful, in your opinion.
Well, at the press conference, Mr. Stoltenberg, because the question was asked by a Ukrainian journalist if they would get the right for a fast track to enter into NATO, and Mr. Stoltenberg was very evasive and not saying that the doors are still open, but Right now, the issue is, as you say, just to give the means to Ukraine to defend its and to reconquer its territory. Now, underground, there were recent reports that even the U.S., you know, the 155-millimeter cannons, ammunition, they're running out of ammunition. They are not producing the ammunition which is required on a daily basis by the Ukrainian army. So from that standpoint, you know, there are skirmishes and things still going on the borders of these four provinces. But basically, the West, I mean, the West has been destroying its own industrial base, including to produce some of these ammunition, which is not arriving. And therefore, this whole idea that there is a big Ukrainian offensive now, it's somehow a big joke. And I think the attack on the pipeline shows that from the West, they are really desperate on the underground situation.
And one last question for you, Mr. Varekin. This is an issue that Mr. Bosnich just mentioned moments ago about the purpose of NATO. I want to get your perspective as well. Why did NATO continue to exist following the collapse of the Soviet Union and at the end of the Cold War? What is the purpose of NATO today as we speak?
Well, the purpose of NATO during its creation, as there was one British lord who said, was the purpose was to keep the Russians out, the Americans in, which means in Europe, and the Germans down. That was the initial purpose of NATO. Today, I agree with, there was a British professor who said that the only purpose of NATO now is to manage the problems and the conflicts they are creating themselves. So we should put, and with my friend Mr. Cheminade in France, we're calling, and many other candidates have been calling, that France should do like De Gaulle and leave the integrated command of NATO, that we need a new international security order and financial order.
Okay.
That this thing is completely prehistorical barbarism. We should get rid of it.
All right. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Belgrade. And Carol Varekin, contributor at the Schiller Institute, speaking to us from the French capital, Paris. And, of course, a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
According to Child Poverty Action Group, already 800,000 children living in poverty in England do not qualify for free school meals. And now head teachers are bracing for rising numbers from homes that cannot afford to feed them properly. We have prepared for you an article written by Anna Fazakali. The piece is titled Fears of Widespread Child Hunger Spark Calls for Universal Free School Meals in UK. Hunger will be the biggest single challenge UK schools face as children return to classrooms in the coming weeks, sparking calls for the government to introduce universal free school meals to help tackle the crisis. According to Child Poverty Action Group, already 800,000 children living in poverty in England do not qualify for free school meals. And now head teachers are bracing for rising numbers from homes that cannot afford to feed them properly. Paul Gosling, head of Exeter Road Community Primary School in Exmouth in Devon, said, "Last winter, I already had a group of children who stood around the radiator outside my office every morning because they had no heating on at home and needed to warm up." He added, "We will have far more children turning up to school hungry." Paul Gosling, who is president of the National Association of Head Teachers Union, said his school was worrying about how to afford to keep the lights on, let alone helping families, but claimed he would not let any child stay hungry. Johnny Utley, the chief executive officer of the Education Alliance Academy Trust, which runs 7 schools in Hull and East Riding, said, "This food poverty is the single biggest challenge schools will face. More and more children will turn up to school hungry. It will go well beyond the definition of free school meals now." He added that even before the horrific energy cap crisis, he was planning measures such as breakfast clubs and uniform vouchers because of rising poverty in his schools. But now the potential scale of the problem is so much worse. In England, all infant school children are entitled to free school meals from reception to year 2. But beyond that, only children whose parents earn less than £7,400 a year are eligible. But the rise in the price cap for the average gas and electricity bill to £3,549 a year from October will mean many who earn more than this amount will face a stark choice between food and heating. It took a campaign by Manchester United and England footballer Marcus Rashford to force Prime Minister Boris Johnson into a U-turn on extending free school meals to the lowest income families during school holidays in November of 2020. The reversal came after a storm of criticism from charities, the opposition, and media from both sides of the political divide. This summer, the British government again funded local authorities to offer eligible children a free meal a day and free activities under its Holiday Activities and Food Programme. But Labour Party has slammed this for being a part-time initiative that operates just 4 days a week for 4 weeks during the summer holiday, leaving children hungry for the rest of the time. Charities are angry that the threshold for free school meals has not changed since 2018, despite soaring inflation. Johnny Utley, the CEO of Education Alliance Academy Trust, believes the government needs to introduce universal free school meals because so many families will be in desperate need despite falling outside of the government's poverty threshold. He claimed the government did an extraordinary thing with furlough in the pandemic because it had to. "It is difficult to see that child hunger isn't as important as that and doesn't require as radical a level of thinking. Richard Murphy, economic justice campaigner and professor of accounting at Sheffield University, said free school meals for all children in state schools was the only possible solution. He said, "Within months, we will be facing the worst economic crisis that anyone alive has witnessed," adding, "The government must move rapidly and universally, as the cost of not doing so is not just child poverty, but child hunger, and that cannot be acceptable." The Welsh Government has committed to rolling out free school meals for all primary school children by 2024, and ministers have said they will try to bring this forward. Ahead of the last Holyrood election, the Scottish National Party pledged to provide a free breakfast and lunch to all primary-age children by August of this year, although this has not yet been achieved. A single mother in Tynan Weir, who spoke to The Observer under condition of anonymity, said that although she is on universal credit and frightened about juggling food and bills this winter, her two sons are not entitled to free school meals at their primary school because she earns £728 a month working part-time in education administration. She said, "We already have thermals and fleece pyjamas so we can avoid putting the heating on in our home. The kids have free swimming lessons, which we have factored in as a hair washing day to avoid running a bath at home." She said, "The cap for free school meals is far too low," adding, "Apparently, we're poor, but not poor enough." Andy Jolly, a former school governor and campaigner for free school meals, said, "It's incredibly difficult to become eligible for free school meals. A lot of people who have lost their jobs, who you would have imagined must be eligible, just aren't." He added, "Registration isn't automatic. Parents have to tell the school and then go through a complicated process to apply. Often because of barriers such as language or fear of stigma, families don't claim." A spokesperson for the Department of Education said, "More than 2,000 schools are currently signed up to the National School Breakfast Programme, claiming, we're investing up to £24 million in the programme and expanded eligibility in January to reach more schools in disadvantaged areas." The spokesperson said, "We're also providing 1.9 million children with free school meals, as well as welfare support for families in need through the Household Support Fund." Moreover, the United Nations has said the number of people going hungry in the world has risen by 150 million people since the start of the COVID pandemic, warning that the food crisis sparked by Russia-Ukraine conflict risks pushing the worst-hit countries into famine. A report has found globally the number suffering from chronic undernourishment rose to as many as 828 million last year, a rise of about 46 million under previous year, and three times that increase if measured since the world shut down due to the COVID pandemic. With the price of fuel, food staples and fertilizer soaring since the Russia's special operation in Ukraine, however, the total is expected to rise even further in the next year, a scenario that could see some of the world's poorest fall into famine, the most extreme form of food deprivation. Due to the uncertainty caused by the lingering impact of COVID shutdowns, the report released recently is unable to give a precise figure for the number of people going hungry in 2022, instead estimating that the total was somewhere between 702 million and 828 million. The report said an estimated 45 million children under the age of 5 were suffering from wasting, the deadliest form of malnutrition, which increases children's risk of death by up to 12 times. About 149 million children under the age of 5 had stunted growth and development due to a chronic lack of essential nutrients.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.